So, Catamortan, thanks very much for dropping in on the podcast today. In this episode, what we thought we'd explore, and I think it's a really kind of relevant topic for so many people, in fact, all of us at some point in our life, is the struggles people have with their self-esteem. What's the thing you see is most prevalent when people are struggling with their self-esteem? Why do you think people struggle so much with self-esteem?
I have discovered that all of that is revolving around how we are perceiving ourself, not esteeming ourself, judging ourself, sometimes attacking ourself, you know, because you can go not just from a lack of self-esteem, you can go all the way to self-loathing. And this is where, in particular, I think Buddhist meditation can be so incredibly helpful, because at the very heart of the spiritual path, as it's described by Buddha, is reorienting how we perceive ourselves. Because Buddha basically says that our main problem is how we perceive ourselves. In fact, he says we are perceiving ourselves incorrectly. And that the path to happiness actually lies in learning to let go of that mistaken apprehension of ourself and to replace it with a correct understanding of ourself. And part and parcel of that mistaken apprehension, unfortunately, is that we perceive ourselves alone in the cosmos, so to speak, separate from others, and limited. The self that appears to us at the moment will appear with all sorts of faults. And we believe that that is our self, and we grasp at that strongly. And it turns out that self is not our self. That's just our own self-image, which at this point in time is super limited and therefore super painful.
Yeah, it's powerful when you really think about that, because often what you're explaining there is just simply what people call me. You know, it's like you can begin to discover the deeper truth of who you are and that understand that all of these limiting beliefs and so forth in no way reflect the truth of who you are.
Absolutely. And in particular, you know, what meditation practice allows us to do is to step away temporarily from that ordinary sense of self with all its faults and limitations, its history, its painful past, its projected difficult future that we're sort of walking around with. We've kind of cloaked ourselves in all of these problems that we believe, as you say, it's just me. That's who I am. But when you meditate and you allow your mind to become still, and then within that experience, even of a little bit of stillness, there's a peace. And that peace is coming about just naturally. You didn't enforce peace upon it. You didn't have to go anywhere. You didn't have to go sit by a pond or anything like that. You just allowed your mind to become still. And then there's a little bit of peace. And what that gives you is a place to rest your mind that is away from your ordinary struggling self-identity, painful way of viewing yourself. And now a door has been opened in your mind to an alternative way of being and something new and positive and expansive, actually, in the sense that you feel like you can begin to nurture this new way of identifying yourself that begins to create the possibility of what we would call basically authentic self-esteem, because you're esteeming the right self. That self is just naturally worthy of respect and esteem, because it's the thing that's actually going to fulfill your deepest wishes for real peace, real happiness, and actually the ability to help others.
But I think what comes out of that, like you say, is this whole new relationship to yourself and also your whole new relationship to who you can become over time. We have far more potential within us. And I guess in that sense, it's like you're entering this whole new experience internally that's building this whole new sense of self-esteem and this whole new sense of possibility.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, within my own experience, you know, if I can just sort of detail my own journey with this, when I was 16, my father passed away, and he'd been sick for about 5 years. So it was a sort of gradual deterioration. This was sort of like the heaviest blow that I experienced at that time. This was also back in the 70s, the late 70s, and it was in Europe. So there was no counseling. There was no nothing, any of that. I was essentially kind of left to my own devices. My friends, lovely and kind as they were, had no basis upon which to even begin to talk to me about it. And the result was that over a very short period of time, I felt that I sort of became way more insecure. Not necessarily in a way that other people would notice, but internally, I was really kind of caught up in a sense of being separate, isolated, and not knowing what to do with all this emotions, feelings of rejection, betrayal, anger, welling up within. And so what do? You repress. You repress. And again, when you're 16, you're just trying to be cool. You know, having your dad drop dead on you and having to all these weird emotions, not cool. So you just push them down. And that becomes then a habit of not being fully honest with what's going on in your mind. So that became something that I carried with me for a while. And it was through the meditative process at varying stages that I was given essentially a methodology through which I could begin to process those emotions. And at some point, I just felt I had no choice but to begin to turn and address my father in my meditation. And what happened was, because I had space to do this, is I just started thinking about his life from his point of view. How he had been a young boy at one point, a teenager. How at some point he'd fallen in love with my mother. They got married. He had a successful career. He had three boys. He was seemingly quite successful. And then cancer came along and took it all. And he died. And what happened was, by thinking about his life from his point of view, all this compassion for him welled up in my heart. And that changed everything. What happened was, I walked away from that and looked at my father's life from his point of view, so that instead of feeling my own personal hurt, my own personal, in a sense, rejection, not that he rejected me, but from one point of view, he did, he died. my own personal sense of abandonment, where you feel isolated and lost. And instead, I just felt like, oh, what about him? And that compassion just freed me from that. And there was a lot more to come, but it opened up the door to recognizing what happens when you step away from the self-centered perspective.
It's interesting that, isn't it? Your past can be like the heaviest burden you carry, but if you reframe it from where you're looking at it from, if we live gradually over time with some increasing confidence from that peace of mind and good heart as the basis of how we relate to ourselves, it's like what used to be your greatest burden, your past, can become your greatest teacher.
Absolutely. And, you know, I can say that now when I think of my father, it doesn't come with any feeling of discomfort or pain. In fact, just deep, deep love and appreciation and a sense of, like, you know, carrying him with me. As something like his absence is a continuous teaching that has its own presence, if you know what I mean. That's a very kind of positive impact on my life. Gradually we learn to do that with everything in our life.
And that's the key, isn't it? We can use even the adversity in our life, and gradually over time, this isn't something we can just flick a switch and we're all good to go. But gradually over time, we can understand that. We can transform everything we experience in life into this deeper source of peace and happiness. And there are many other ways, and I'd love to get your take on that.
In our society, sometimes the word happy is understood, I think, in quite a glib way. You know, it's sort of like jazz hands, happy, happy kind of thing, you know, as opposed to what we mean when we talk about it, which is happiness is that which naturally arises from a peaceful, centered awareness when you're in your nature. It's so deep, you know, and it's so positive. Happiness actually is your nature. Peace is your nature. It's within that experience that you, as you mentioned earlier, you're in the truth. You're actually in reality. You're connecting to reality. You know, within the Buddhist framework, reality is actually enlightenment. Reality is enlightenment. A being who is in reality is an enlightened being. And that's so important to understand, because I think sometimes when people think of enlightenment, they think of it as an unattainable sort of super state. And of course, we're sitting there in our limited self, so we're going, I can't do that. That's not possible. They think of it as a sort of Mount Everest thing, you know, up there far away. But no, enlightenment is the state of being that you will be in when you let go of that self-centered perspective that is all centered around a misapprehension of who you are, that your own mind created. And I think for people who are struggling with low self-esteem and so on, who, in other words, feel trapped in that limited self-conception, it's really important to know assistance is on hand. It's not just you fighting your own mind. No, there's power that you can tap into that will help you access that peace and help you access that joy. And that's such an important component of it.
And I guess as well, it's so direct and experiential that people don't have to believe it. You just have to allow yourself to open up to the possibility of it. So you're connecting with this peaceful nature of your own mind. And what I love about this, and especially your explanation of it, and certainly has been my journey with it, it's utterly experiential. You connect with your potential.
Yeah, that's what happens when we begin to access the deeper aspect of our mind and recognizing that we are actually, we're not caught up in a separate piece, but actually we're accessing a piece that in a sense goes across the board. You know, we're accessing reality. And it just makes everything so much easier. Like I align it to the difference between trying to kind of row a boat across an ocean and just hoisting a sail. And when you hoist a sail, it's not you doing the sailing. You're just catching the wind, right? You just need to make subtle adjustments with your hands holding the sail to catch the wind. And it's really the same in meditation. We learn eventually to in a sense hand over skillfully. So like just we need to monitor our mind, move our mind into that alignment with peace or with love or with compassion or with wisdom, whatever the meditation may be. But recognizing that when we kind of get it, it's because we've moved our mind into alignment with reality. And you will progress much, much more rapidly. And this is so important to understand, because sometimes, and I think generally speaking within our society, we feel that, you know, trauma, something that you might have, you know, some terrible experience you might have had when you were a child, or is almost unhealable. You can kind of learn to work around it, but not fully free yourself from it. But the Buddhist view is, no, you can, because your mind is by nature pure. So even though that might be a strong imprint on the mind, the trauma, there might be some scar tissue there, so to speak, it's not your nature. It's still just, to use an analogy, the sand in the water, but it's not the water. It can be removed by you learning to give yourself over to your own pure nature. And yes, everything can be purified. Not just terrible things that may have been done to you, but terrible things you may have done. It can all be purified. There's no point in hanging out in guilt and regret or feeling bad about ourselves. None of that serves any purpose. It doesn't help. I do just want to briefly just touch upon the enjoyment bit, because it kind of connects very much, you know, because we're talking about how to relate to adversity. But we also learn how to relate to enjoyment. For example, if you eat something, you pause and, you know, depending on your situation, but, you know, you pause and give yourself permission to enjoy it and ask yourself, where is the enjoyment? Is it in the food, or is it in the mind experiencing the food? And of course, it's in the mind, which is interesting, because if you understand that and give yourself permission to hang out there and really enjoy it, it takes away the compulsion that normally arises. Oh, I need to have more of that. Because, no, the enjoyment is in the mind. That just functions as a nice little trigger, you know, to give rise to that enjoyment. And now I can hang out with the enjoyment and have it remind me of my pure nature, that enjoyment, peace, happiness, what I'm looking for is in my mind. So thank you, enjoyment. You didn't take me away by having me get all excited and developing uncontrolled desire. No, you did the opposite. You made me develop a wish to go deeper into the heart. And all of this is just allowing us, well, first of all, to have a much better time in life. But our enjoyments are meaningful because they keep deepening our path. Adversity takes us into refuge. Enjoyment takes us into refuge. Our whole life becomes a path towards enlightenment that we can share with others. We're the more peaceful, more joyful, more happy we become, the more we can share that with others, give that and use it to encourage others. That's real self-love, actually. You know, self-love is a big term these days, but I think often people confuse it with loving that hurts self, as opposed to recognizing, no, I'm going to love the self that can grow, that can become more peaceful, that become more compassionate, more wise, and that can help others. That's what we're talking about here.
Thank you so much for all of that. But I think what I'd love to hear from you just before we sign off today, if you only had one piece of advice to give to somebody who's struggling with self-esteem today, what would that advice be based on your years of experience?
Within Buddhist practice, we say we go for refuge to three things. Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And we've spoken about Dharma, which is basically the truth. You know, you're going for refuge to your own inner truth, your peace, your happiness, and to the minds that are in alignment with that, compassion and love and wisdom. So that's the real refuge, because that's your own internal experience, but you're also tuning into that blessing energy. You're tuning into the reality of enlightenment that's tuning into you. But the third leg of refuge, I think, is also really important, and actually I think is vital within the discussion we're having, which is Sangha. And what Sangha basically means is community. And Sangha in particular, our spiritual community, are people who are on that journey. Because we do need examples in our life. We need encouraging examples. When we're struggling with self-respect or self-esteem, when we're caught up in low self-esteem, we can often feel just very isolated. And we need good people in our life who are, well, who perhaps have undergone that journey themselves and exemplifying it, but who also are looking at us, because that's what Sangha do, because they're relating to their potential. And so when they look at you, they see that potential in you. And so I think it is important to have examples. I mean, you know, in some sense, this podcast is functioning as Sangha, you know, hopefully setting a good example and giving encouragement to people in their life. And so that's what I would basically say, you know, start your own process or begin your or continue your own process of accessing that inner peace. But do recognize, try to bring good examples into your life, reach out and find that kind of assistance of people who are on a similar path and can help you.
So, Kata Morton, my very dear Sangha friend, thank you so much for that. I think this has been a fantastic conversation. I think there's so much in there for everyone. So thank you, my friend.
I've loved everything you've said as well, and I've enjoyed this so much. Thank you.